Jikajara Sara Sadashi Shimdasavan Grace AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gananda. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Vidale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Kanamane Namaste Sarasadevam. Gauravani Pacharni Nirvishesha Srinivari Paschacha Deshachane. Jai Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 64, The Deliverance of King Riga, Text 30, and then we'll go through Text 34. So we'll chant Text 30 together. Ityugva tam parikramya, padau sprisht vasvamolina, anugyato vimangriyam, arhuhat pashyatam drinam, ityukva tam parikramya, adau sprisht vasvamalina, anugyato vimanagriyam, arhuhat pashyatam drinam, ityukva tam parikramya, adau sprishva svamalina, anugyato vimanagrim, aruhat pashyatam nirnam. Ladies. Students.
Thank you. you.
With the word iti, thus, uktva, having spoken, tam, him, parikramya, circumambulating, padau, his feet, sprishtva, touching, sva, with his, malina, crown, anugyata, given leave, vimana, a celestial airplane, agriyam, excellent, arhuhat, he boarded, pashyatam, as they watched, nirinam, humans. Translation by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Having spoken thus, Maharaj Nriga circumambulated Lord Krishna and touched his crown to the Lord's feet. Granted permission to depart, King Nriga then boarded a wonderful celestial airplane as all the people present looked on. I'll just read the next few verses for the sake of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, who is especially devoted to the Brahmins and who embodies the essence of religion, then spoke to his personal associates and instructed the royal class in general. So now Lord Krishna is beginning to speak some of the lessons learned from the story of King Nriga. Lord Krishna said, how indigestible is the property of a Brahmin, even when enjoyed just slightly and by one more potent than fire? What then to speak of kings who try to enjoy it, presuming themselves lords? Report, even those made powerful by austerity, mystic yoga, and so on, cannot enjoy property stolen from a Brahmin, and what to speak of others? 33, I do not consider a halahala to be real poison, because it has an antidote, but a Brahmin's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in the world. And I think I will just read the word-for-word translation of halahalam. It says, this is the poison named halahala, which Lord Shiva is famous for having drunk without toxic effects. So everybody remembers the story of Lord Shiva drinking poison? Although there was one effect, wasn't there? What happened to him? What? His neck turned blue, right? Okay. Purport. One who takes a Brahmin's property thinking to enjoy it has actually taken the most deadly poison. And text 34, poison kills only the person who ingests it, and an ordinary fire may be extinguished with water. But the fire generated from the kindling wood of a Brahmin's property burns the thief's entire family down to the root. Pretty heavy. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti compares the fire ignited by stealing a Brahmin's property to the fire that blazes within the cavity of an old tree. Such a fire cannot be put out even with the water of numerous rainfalls. Rather, it burns the whole tree from within, all the way down to the roots in the ground. Similarly, the fire ignited by stealing a Brahmin's property is the most deadly and should be avoided at all costs. Om Gyanaka Brandisha Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Minitamina Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhavivacha Patitano Pavana Dio Vaishnavidu Namo Namaha. So, Lord Krishna is beginning to give instruction, and he's particularly talking to the royal order here. In other words, he's talking to all the other kings and kshatriyas. And so he's especially explaining to them the position of a Brahmin. Because we had this example of King Nriga, who was a very powerful king and who did give in charity, but somehow or another by accident gave the wrong cows or gave the cows twice to two different Brahmins. And of course, there was a very strong reaction for this. Now, of course, everything turned out well in the end because due to King Nriga's pious activity, he was able to get the darshan of Krishna. Krishna touched him directly. He is restored to his body of a demigod, and now he goes off in a celestial airplane back to the heavenly planets. So all ended well for him, but at the same time, he did have to suffer that reaction of becoming a lizard and living in a well. So Krishna is now giving his instruction to emphasize his importance, the importance of Brahmins, and how important it is that one doesn't commit offenses to Brahmins. And the example is given here of the burning of a hollow tree. In other words, if a tree is burning and there's a rainfall, it will put the fire out. But have you ever seen a hollow tree, you know, with a big hole in the middle of it? Sometimes we had some here, and those trees usually eventually fell down because they're rotting on the inside. But that fire were on the inside of the tree would be very difficult to put out. And eventually it would burn the whole tree down, as it says here, is down to the roots. So this is given an example of how serious an offense it is to steal from a Brahmin. Of course, this idea of stealing or desiring other people's property is not so difficult to understand. This is part of the nature of the material world, that people are always looking towards others, always trying to accumulate. They're always looking for something that they don't have. Bhagavad Gita explains this, Nishochitina Kanchati. Of course, this verse is very famous from the 18th chapter. Brahmabhuta Prasanatma Nishochitina Kanchati. But it's actually also mentioned in an earlier chapter. Does anybody know where else the same line exactly, Nishochitina Kanchati, is found? This one might be more for the adults. Where else is Nishochitina Kanchati found besides 1854? I had to look this up. I don't know verses at all, as you all know. But Dravida, I'm really. Is Pushkar here? Nobody? Where is it? It's chapter 12. Yeah, it's 12:17. And that's where Krishna is talking about qualities of devotee, that one who's very dear to him, one who's very dear to Krishna, says this one is Nishochitina Kanchati. I thought it was interesting. It's actually twice in the Bhagavad Gita, because it's a very, very important concept. We hanker for what we don't have, or we desire what we don't have, and we lament for what's lost. As soon as we lose something, we feel bad about it, and as soon as we don't have it, something, we want it all the time. So it's natural that people are always looking for something, and sometimes even other people's property. In fact, because of the nature of the material world, in fact, in this Kali Yuga, the modern world's very, very expert at this, at creating desires, even that we didn't know we had. You know, like sometimes you can be perfectly happy with your electronic gadgets or your iPad or your iPhone or whatever, but a new one comes out, and what happens? You immediately think you have to have it. You know, even though your phone is perfectly well answering phone calls, getting email, or whatever you need it to do, there's that newer one that's there. And that's this process of always hankering or desiring something else in this material world. So this leads sometimes to the extreme of the idea of stealing other people's property. And we can see that this is a very, very serious offense, and particularly if one is stealing the property of a Brahmin. So here's a question for the students. What is a Brahmin? You have an answer? First hand up, what? People who know how to do fire sacrifice? Yeah, that's part of it. That's good. What else? Go ahead. They're initiated? Yeah. Yes, that's very good. A person is initiated as a Brahmin. They call it, you know, second birth or being twice born. One's initiated by the spiritual master as a Brahmin. That's real good. What else? Anything else? Over here. A religious person, yes. It's somebody. And in fact, when we say the name Brahmin, what is it that that religious person knows or understands? What does the name imply? What? Knows Krishna and Brahman. In other words, Brahman means Brahman or the absolute truth or spiritual knowledge. You know, it can be widely defined in many different ways. But in other words, a Brahmin is one who knows Brahman, who understands spiritual knowledge, understands specifically when it's not the body, knows spiritual energy is different from material. So a Brahmin is somebody who is highly educated, who is initiated, who can do fire sacrifices, do deity worship, obviously. So a Brahmin is a very important person in our culture and Veda culture, obviously. Now, what is a Vaishnav? Sometimes we talk about Brahmins and Vaishnavs. Is there a difference? What is a Vaishnav? What? A devotee of Krishna, exactly. We don't need to go further than that. That's a perfect definition. Vaishnav is a devotee of Krishna. So which is more important, being a Brahmin or being a Vaishnav? Being a Vaishnav, very good. That was an easy one. Okay, Srila Prabhupada has a nice explanation of this. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.2 purport. Prabhupada says, generally, a man is born as an ordinary being, and by the purificatory process, he's born for the second time. When he sees a new light and seeks direction for spiritual progress, he approaches the spiritual master for instruction in the Vedas. The spiritual master accepts only the sincere inquirer as his disciple and gives him the sacred thread. So that's also part of being a Brahmin, getting the Gayatri mantra and at least the sacred thread if you're in a male body. In this way, a man becomes twice born or a dvija. After qualifying as a dvija, one may study the Vedas, and after becoming well-versed in the Vedas, one becomes a vipra. We don't so much have these classifications, but this is to understand. A vipra, or a qualified Brahmin, thus realizes the absolute and makes further progress in spiritual life until he reaches the Vaishnav stage. The Vaishnav stage is the postgraduate status of a Brahmin. So that's a good way to understand it. In other words, you go beyond being a Brahmin, even higher is the Vaishnav. A progressive Brahmin must necessarily become a Vaishnav, or a Vaishnav is a self-realized learned Brahmin. Okay. Yeah, actually it is. Oh, is that the verse itself, not the purport? Oh, I see. Okay. So, we're talking here specifically about the offense of stealing from a Brahmin, or we could say stealing from a Vaishnav, but there are other offenses as well. And it's very important in our spiritual life to avoid offenses. So we want to avoid offenses to devotees. We hear this constantly. We hear how important this is. So first of all, who is a Vaishnava devotee? Who are these Vaishnavas that we're worried about offending? Who would we want to be very careful not to offend? Anybody? Yeah. The devotee. What kind of devotee? Any devotee. That's a great answer. Thank you. Yes. What about your brothers and sisters or your family members? That doesn't matter, does it? They're not devotees? No. What about your classmates, the other students? Can you offend them? No. All devotees should not be offended. All devotees are important. In fact, this is brought up in a very important, it's a very small book called Madhurya Kandambani by Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, and it's a wonderful book, and it talks about many principles of devotional service, and there's one whole section about offenses, which I'm going to be talking about. And one thing that he says in there is sometimes people think, well, yes, Vaishnava aparad applies to advanced Mahabhagavats or great devotees, the spiritual master, the guru, but not so much to just ordinary devotees. And Vishnath says, nope, doesn't work that way. He said, you cannot commit offense to any devotees. Doesn't matter whether they're highly advanced or not so advanced. So in other words, all devotees should be treated in the right way and avoid offenses to them. In fact, we know that when we recite the 10 offenses to the holy name, what is the first offense? Blaspheming the devotees who have dedicated lives to the propagation of the holy name of the Lord. So it's so important that it's listed as the number one offense. And in fact, sometimes it's called, what's it compared to? What animal? The mad elephant offense. I saw this, somebody, probably my wife, show me this YouTube video. Has anyone ever seen a mad elephant in operation? There was this it was in India, and there was some video of an elephant. It was just destroying everything, throwing over cars, crying. I mean, a mad elephant can really cause damage. So the example is given that if you have a garden and a mad elephant went into your garden, what would be left? Nothing. They would just destroy everything. So what garden or what plant are we worried about as devotees? What? Tulsi, what else? For ourselves. What is our devotional service compared to? The creeper, right? The Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of the Bhakti Lata, the devotional creeper. So it's described that devotional creeper, when we begin devotional service, it's a very tender, like a little plant, and it must be cared for. And it needs to be watered. And what's the watering process? Hearing and chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam is the watering process of our creeper devotional service as it grows. But we have to be careful about other things. What else do you have to worry about when you're gardening? What? Hmm? Weeds. Someone said weeds. Yes. Weeds are a big... What else? Snakes. Okay. Yeah, anyway, lots of things to worry about in gardening. Anyway, we have to be very careful taking care of our plants, and weeds is one of the issues. That's okay. Slug, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, yes, and in Florida, we know a lot about all kinds of bugs. This is the insect capital of the world, I think, Alachua County. But at any rate, these weeds can choke out the creeper, and the weeds are compared to offenses. So we know that there are 10 offenses against the holy name. And in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of Ajamil, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura writes a wonderful commentaries in there where he talks about this principle of offenses. And he says, with most offenses of Namaparad, or offenses against the holy name, they are relieved with the continual chanting. In other words, we continue to chant, and he said, and we will eventually become free from those offenses without suffering. However, there are two offenses that Vishwanath says that one will have to suffer while one is in the process of becoming purified if one commits. And those two are committing sin on the strength of chanting and offending or blaspheming devotees. So in other words, if you, some of the other offenses, if you're a neophyte devotee and you're not really sure and you think chanting the names of Brahma and Shiva are equal to Vishnu, eventually you keep chanting and you'll get over that. You'll understand. Krishna will reveal that it's not as serious of an offense. But if we commit offenses to devotees, this is very serious, and we may have to suffer some reaction, just as King Nriga did. In other words, King Nriga was very, very pious, did so many pious activities, but because he did commit an offense to a Brahmin, Vaishnav, he had to suffer some reaction for that. So it is very important, and the effects of those offenses are also very serious. In the Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath says, in spite of the fact that bhava or rati has appeared, the obstacles have not completely dissipated. So he's even talking about a very high stage of devotional accomplishment. Such persons are therefore classed as sadhakas. There still remains a trace of some serious aparad because the effects of aparad are very strong and long-lasting. In this condition, without even a trace of aparad that generates suffering, with even a trace of aparad that generates suffering, sadhya bhakti, perfectional state, cannot appear. So what it really comes down to is offenses prevent us from becoming pure in devotional service. To reach the highest stage of complete happiness and bliss in devotional service, that will not appear as long as there are offenses. So that's how important it is. Now, fortunately, there's a remedy for this, as there is for everything. Krishna consciousness is the solution. There is a solution to Vaishnava aparad. What is that? If you commit offense to a devotee, some of you older students can probably know this, or you, all, any of you, what you need to do if you commit an offense to a devotee? Anyone say? What do you think? Thank you. Okay. This is, by, if you don't know, this is my daughter here, the teacher, so we can, we have a little. Thank you, Jayashri. To ask forgiveness for the devotees. Yes, somebody said it. Okay, she said it. To ask forgiveness for it from that devotee. That is how we solve the problem of offenses. And you know, and we may all commit offenses, sometimes inadvertently. You know, sometimes just in the normal course of events. I know that those of us in management probably are causing offenses all the time, just in the normal course of our service and just executing service. So we have to be very aware of this. And we have to be very much in the mood of asking forgiveness from our God brothers and God sisters and all devotees, you know, to become free from the result of our offenses. So this is a very important principle. And the thing is, if you're in doubt whether you've committed an offense or not, just take the humble position. Why not? It never hurts us to become humble. It never hurts us to ask for forgiveness for devotees or to apologize to devotees. Sometimes we think we may have offended a devotee. It turns out that they don't feel offended at all. You know, that's, but why, you know, so why carry that all around? Say, Prabhu, I'm sorry, did I offend you? No, you didn't offend. Or if you did, then you clear it up. And sometimes you find you become great friends afterwards. You know, I've had experiences. I had an experience with a devotee who was feeling offended by something they said, thought that I had said or done years and years before. And finally they came and asked me about it, and turned out it was a mistake. It was something that I hadn't actually done, although I could have very easily. And it was just, and it was cleared up, you know, and then that friendship redeveloped. So it never is wrong to take the humble position, to ask forgiveness of the devotees, you know, to try to really have good relationships with devotees, because these devotee relationships are so important, and they take work. You can't just assume automatically that they're just going to be there without any problem, because none of us are in a pure state where our actions are pure and perfect. And so therefore, we are likely to commit mistakes, and even if they're small mistakes, it's really good to try to clear those things up and purify the situation. Now, why do we do this? Why do we commit offenses? What is the tendency? There's actually a root cause. It's a four-letter word. Not a bad four-letter word. It starts with an E. Could it be? Envy, yes. The problem is that we have envy within the heart. That's why we're here in this material world, every one of us. We are originally envious of God. Therefore, we come into this material world to enjoy separately from Him. And that envy then becomes, it extends to other living entities. There's a really night, we were going back to 1854, I was looking at that, the Brahmabhuta verse, and in that purport, Prabhupada explains kind of the nature of envy and how we overcome it. Prabhupada says, the devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness, becomes also full in himself. He is just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he is naturally always joyful. He does not lament for any material loss or aspire for gain, because he is full in the service of the Lord. He has no desire for material enjoyment, because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eternally a servant. He does not see in the material world someone is higher or someone is lower. He knows that these positions are all ephemeral, and a devotee has nothing to do with ephemeral appearances or disappearances. For him, stone and gold are of equal value. This is the Brahmabhuta stage, and the stage is attained very easily by the pure devotee. So it's a very wonderful purport, which explains sort of the cause and result of when we do give up envy, when we return to the Brahmabhuta stage of perfection. The cause, or I guess the more you could say the cure for envy, is given in this purport. Prabhupada actually makes two points that are in this purport. It's a little subtle, but you know, kind of extract them from this purport. Prabhupada says, what is needed is spiritual knowledge, is one of the reasons why we do not feel envy, and secondly, satisfaction of bhakti itself. So a devotee must have knowledge. Prabhupada said he knows himself to be a fragmental part and parcel of Krishna. And by knowing Krishna, this creates a sense of appreciation of Krishna, a sense of understanding Krishna, and then service and worship to Krishna. And that's the opposite of envy. When we're worshiping Krishna wholeheartedly, that's no envy in the heart. You know, the mood of service overcomes envy. And we're filled with devotion and love and relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada also says one must have the satisfaction of bhakti in full in service to the Lord. Naturally, he'll always be joyful. If we're full in service to the Lord, now that's a very interesting little expression. Full means, when you think of full, what? Filled up, satiated. One is satisfied. If you eat a large meal and you're full, what does that mean? You're satisfied, right? You have no, you don't, and you say, I'm so full, I couldn't eat anything else. So if you're full in satisfaction with your service to God, to Krishna, then you don't need anything else. And there's certainly no room in the heart for envy. There's no room in the heart for criticism of others. There's no room in the heart for having to somehow raise one's own position at the expense of others. That's not there in the heart of the devotee. The heart of the devotee is pure and it is full in devotional service. So from that satisfaction, devotional service, the heart is purified and we return from our original position, not our original position, the position we come into this material world of one of envy, that becomes purified and we become restored to our natural position of pure love of God. So I'll end at that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Can we take some comments or questions? One right behind you, then.
Thank you, Prabhuji. I have a question. You stressed the point on devotee care. How should we as devotees of Krishna and practicing Krishna consciousness treat non-devotees?
How do we treat non-devotees? It's actually explained that there are, especially it's talked about as one on the Majjhima or the middle platform of Krishna consciousness, actually sees four types of people. There's four types. First, Krishna, we worship. Then there's those superior devotees that we worship and we offer service to. Those on sort of our own platform, we become friends with. Those that are on a perhaps a lower platform, a less advanced platform, we extend mercy to them. To the non-devotees, one also extends one's mercy and tries to make them Krishna conscious. There's only one class of people, the really atheistic, demoniac people that we avoid. So it's interesting that when you look at these classes of relationships, in none of those relationships is there condescension, disdain, hatred, none of that. It's not there. It's not the way the devotee acts towards anyone. So for the non-devotee, if one is very hostile, you just avoid them. And if they're a little bit sincere or just even a little bit, friendly or willing to associate, then we try to give them Krishna consciousness. The other thing is we remember is some of you children were born as devotees, but most of us older people were not. We were all non-devotees at one time. And we received the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the mercy of the devotees. They extended themselves to us and helped us to become Krishna conscious from the position we were in. Okay. Dravida? Oh, over here.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a very enlightening class. And I'm going to learn that verse that I didn't know. Thank you for that. One wise...
It's probably the only verse she doesn't know.
I was once on a plane, on a train ride from Mayapur to Hyderabad. This was 1975, just before the opening of the Krishna Balaram Temple, 40 years ago, almost to the day. And I was just a two-year devotee, and I long ride. I got into criticizing, I did a little this and that. How do we do something? Did you hear what he did? And this devotee, who had been in the movement maybe 4 years, he stopped me. And he said, always, don't criticize devotees. You should always try to glorify. If you can glorify devotees, that, just like you were saying, the mood of service to Krishna, there's no room for the envy. So the opposite of the criticism, and it may start out as something very small, but it can build up into a fire. If you're always trying to serve the devotees and glorify devotees, then, you'll tend to be much less liable to commit offense. So it works not only the root of service to Krishna, but the servant of the devotees also.
Very, very good point. Thank you so much, Prabhu. There was over in this side. We have Pavitra and then Sukhita. Okay, we got a few over there. Well, Sukhita, Pavitra. And...
I just wanted to make the point that often when Prabhupada referring to devotees, he has a broader definition of a devotee than that we sometimes think of. Like someone who's serving God, for example, our guest, who believes in God as serving God, he also uses the term devotee as well.
Yeah. Devotee is anybody who, as you said, anybody who is serving God, one is devoted to God.
On the 10 offenses, it says we should offer all respects to others. This includes non-devotees, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Maybe the one is. Yeah. I think this is very important. In other words, one who, you know, this idea of seeing with equal vision, and this is mentioned several places in the Bhagavad Gita, that one has this vision of seeing everybody as being part and parcel of Krishna, everyone as being connected with Krishna. The more one is advanced, the more one sees Krishna and doesn't see separately from Krishna. That's important.
You mentioned in the beginning that the story of King Nriga ended up well in the end, and he went to the heavenly planets. How is that ending up well, especially after having contact with Krishna and offering such nice prayers? Wouldn't we expect that he would be liberated?
Yeah, we would. And he probably was, but maybe he got to go back and finish. I don't know if there's more to the story or whether it continues, but I don't think it does. I think that's all that we hear about him at this point, because then the rest of it is just Krishna speaking about these philosophical points. I'm assuming, if he was touched by Krishna, how much better does it get?
Is it something like Dhruva Maharaj? He had to still get that planet.
There's several situations where someone continued, the particular life they were in, or they continued in a heavenly planet, or sometimes some, kings finished out their rule as being king, and then at the end of that lifetime were liberated. Anything more on this side before we come back? Oh, one more over there. Okay, never mind.
I just had a comment. You were speaking about asking forgiveness, and a lot of times we do think elderly devotees or peers, and being a parent and raising a child and making a lot of mistakes for so many reasons, these children, Prabhupada said, can be demigods waiting in line to take birth in this movement. So I think as parents, it's important when we do make a mistake or there's a misunderstanding to be able to apologize to our children. And I think it sets a good example. And I know in my experience, it really changed the energy. It changes the child. And it's just very exemplary, and they deserve it.
Okay, thank you. Of course, there also is, a specific service of being a parent, which does involve sometimes chastising so in other words, it's a little bit different relationship, but you're right. We should always have that vision of Vaishnavas that we're dealing with.
I guess further answering the question about what happened to King Nriga. Mm. So it wasn't just pious activity that enabled him to see Krishna or be liberated by Krishna. Mm. Actually, what happened was there was one Vaishnava who was building a temple, and he needed books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. And in this particular instance, King Nriga assisted him by giving him the books. So this is now devotional service. Mm. It falls completely out of the category of all the other pious activities. And he was blessed by the Brahmana. He was given a benediction that he would at some time see Krishna. And therefore, in the body of a lizard, he was constantly thinking in his mind because of the blessing of the Vaishnava. So this was not just pious activity, it was a spiritual life. It began his spiritual life. So yes, he may have for some time, like Dhruva, gone to the heavenly planets. But then we know that once we begun the process, one is forcibly dragged the rest of the way. That hook was in his mouth. Like fishermen do that sometimes. They'll use the... Yeah. It kind of enhances the sport. They'll use kind of a thin line, and then the fish will take the bait. But in order that doesn't become broken, they have to wear that fish out a little bit. They don't just drag them right back. So they kind of let the fish have a little bit of free run and get tired and tired and tired, and gradually he can be reeled in. So in the case of King Nriga, that was in the mouth, and perhaps going to the heavenly planet, Krishna was just playing him out until he completely weathered him out. But it was there. He was going back to Godhead in time.
Thank you for that colorful analogy. Nahari and I are old friends, by the way. We were in Miami together in 1973, I think, way, way back, right? Yeah. Okay. Janmashtami. I think probably our last one.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Nice class. I'm wondering if you've been in management for many years, what are the guidelines that Prabhupada set? I mean, managers, they have to discriminate who should do what. Now, how can they do this in such a way as not to incur Vaishnava apparat or commit Vaishnava apparat?
I'm trying to find that balance still. It's difficult. I don't know if Prabhupada gave exact guidelines on, I'm trying to think on that particular point, but there is a point where, I mean, in other words, there is a certain natural authority that's there in the world everywhere. You know, parents have authority, teachers have authority, you know, in jobs, bosses have authority, you know, and in spiritual life, we also do have authorities. We have spiritual authority, and Prabhupada very distinctly and very specifically set up systems of managerial, you know, systems within ISKCON, and that does require, you know, acting in that capacity, which sometimes means that what you find as a manager is you sometimes have to make decisions that somebody doesn't like. In fact, it's inevitable, often because sometimes, you know, usually it's either this person is pleased or this person is pleased, and sometimes you can't, you do your best, but you can't always please everybody. And I think what you have to do, the consciousness has to be that I'm doing this service on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. And if you just somehow just, you have to force yourself to be thinking that way all the time, daily, all the time. You know, in other words, this isn't for me, this isn't about my service, this isn't about my position, this isn't, you know, the opportunity to lord it over others, that kind of thing. You have to always be in that humble state of mind that even if I have to do difficult things or I have to do things that people may not like or be so pleasant, this is for Prabhupada and for Krishna, your service. And then you pray for guidance, that you will be properly instructed within the heart and that you'll be properly instructed by the Vaishnavas, you know, and you have to listen and take that instruction. And then hopefully you can avoid a position where you're causing some offense. Then Prabhupada says there are different expressions, like Prabhupada said, to call a fool is not an offense, or something like that. In other words, in other words, if one is doing what one has to do and one is being honest, you know, it's not necessarily an offense. A lot of it has to do with the motive, the consciousness and the motive that one have, how we interact, you know, and that takes constant checking and purification. You know, because it's easy for, you know, the razor's edge. Last comment, Dravid, did you have one more? Something to say?
It just reminded me of something I heard when I was reflecting about quoting a verse, a famous verse, how, I'm going to give the Sanskrit, that one should associate with devotees, and especially a pure devotee, because by their words, they're strong words, they can cut off the desires in the mind. In other words, and in the management of our ISKCON, in a sense, the authorities are representing the supreme authority, Krishna and the spiritual master. But that means they have a very heavy responsibility. And in their disciplining, as you say, they have to be detached from that and doing it for the benefit of the whoever they're instructing. Say the whole thing is in the motivation, and that motivation, and then if a person good consciousness, they'll take it as that, and the result won't, you know, he's lording it over, but rather that, he gave me instruction. So it is a razor's edge, but that's actually the same function that the spiritual master does for the benefit of the sadhaka. You sometimes strong words and correction are needed.
Well, thank you. It's a good note to end on, and also remember that the primary offense is you would never want to offend your GBC. That was a joke for everybody out there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.